flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Welcome back, folks. Every Tuesday in the 11 o'clock hour, we visit with folks and we set aside time in our NOLA Coalition segment, Difference Makers in Our Community. And we have been a beneficiary of meeting so many incredibly just phenomenal people. And we really appreciate the time that they spend with us. And today's no different. We are joined by Cornelius Bankston, Managing Partner of TechPlug. Cornelius, welcome to the show.
Hey there. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us about TechPlug.
TechPlug, we have been here in New Orleans for 3.5 years. We are a technology innovation firm. We're working to address health inequities in our communities here in Louisiana.
So when we talk about health inequities, exactly what do we mean by that?
Well, when you think about access, right, those things around social determinants of health, individuals that might be living in food deserts where they're not able to get healthy foods, or individuals that might be resource challenge from receiving their prescriptions, like how do you get them their prescriptions from a transportation perspective? If you're looking at individuals that might be managing chronic diseases like diabetes and high blood pressure, what type of innovation can meet them at their doorstep so that they can be proactive around their care opposed to reactive?
So as you just listed those, my sense is a lot of people have a very difficult time understanding that. And I guess for me, perspective changed when I started caring for my elderly parents. And, you know, it causes one to reflect and you say to oneself, you know, what if everyone, because I'm the only child living here, the other two are living in other areas of the country. It's like, what if there were none living here? It's really kind of an eye opener. You know, as to how all of that would work for that individual.
Right. Right. Yeah. It can be a very complicated and arduous task for some. And so when you lean into technology opportunities of managing, care remotely. So those are some things that we see and with some of these innovations where, say, for instance, there's no one in a state where a parent might live and they're managing some type of chronic disease. With the new ways that we're imagining innovations, individuals and even their clinicians can monitor their health remotely. So one could be in one city, another could be in another state, and could still have access to their health information and ensure that they're getting the quality of care that they might need.
And when you think of all the hurdles that you have to jump over, and the reason I put it in this context, Cornelius, is try to follow me here, is that a lot of folks look at this, you know, from a distance and say, oh, that happens to people over there. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you mm-hmm. find out, you're over there.
You know? Right.
And you're in the middle of it, and you're like, yes. How the hell did I find myself in this predicament? Well,
right.
You know, it's
exactly.
You just got slapped with reality in many respects,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes, that's very true. This isn't something that just impacts one demographic. It can impact all of us, right? Especially as our baby boomers are aging, living longer, right? Quality care is a concern. People want to stay in their homes, although they might be challenged with a multitude of health issues that they might be managing. And, you know, like you mentioned, assembly could be living in New York and you're here in Louisiana in one city, another person's in Atlanta. And so how do we think about galvanizing, you know, innovations that meet people where they are as it relates to their life journey, right? So how can we imagine or develop innovations to meet people where they are as it relates to their journey of life? If I am 80 years old, still have the mobility of my limbs, and I do not want to go and live in an assisted living facility and probably want to stay in my home, what type of health innovations or innovations are available for me at that age so that I can continue to live, you know, an independent lifestyle, but also have the connectedness with my physicians or children so that they can understand and see where I might be in real time?
Yeah. It's interesting how as you get older, your perspective changes mm-hmm. on a number of different issues, right?
Yes, yes, very true.
And you look at things in one perspective, and then it changes really quick for some folks.
We
were just having this conversation with some friends of ours over this past weekend, and it's like mm-hmm. you feel like your whole world is upside down, and that's what makes. Mm-hmm. Innovation firms like yours even all the more important mm-hmm. to try and create innovative ways of reaching these mm-hmm. same conclusions that others are able to achieve a lot easier. Now, you guys are going to have something called the Rue Experience, which is a two-day activation on the 31st and the 1st. Tell us about that event.
Yes, sir. Incredibly excited about this opportunity. The Rue Experience is a food as medicine activation. It's a two-day activation where we are bringing together chefs, NFL players to reimagine. On day one, we're reimagining a Louisiana dish with a healthy twist. For some of us, food is medicine. And so we're trying to figure out intercalating healthy meal options or healthy ingredients to some of our favorite Louisiana dishes. Day two is a two-part series. I could say it that way to day two. The first part of the day in the morning, we'll have a series of panel discussions with Dr. Veronica Gillespie Bell around maternal health. We'll have Dr. Christy Valentine Thayer, who will be moderating a panel around food as medicine. We'll also have Judy Reese Morris on our financial health panel. Latham Thomas, who is the CEO of Mama Glow, will come in and give us a keynote conversation around food as medicine and how we could think through that from a healthy living perspective. And then we're going to gather together as New Orleans and Louisianans do and do a second line parade from our space at 2600 Ursulines Avenue over to one of our partner schools, Berkeley Lodge Academy, where we'll be giving away over 100 boxes of healthy food to the community. And people are like, well, okay, that's a lot. But I think for the culminating experience of gifting community members, no matter where you might live in the city or in the state, please come by and get these boxes of food because they'll be able to feed a family of four.
So when we say that food is medicine, expound on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, just kind of reimagining how we prepare our foods. So studies have shown, you know, just intercalating different types of ingredients into our dishes that we consume, maybe eliminating salt and thinking of other seasonings that we could include into our food to help regulate potential high blood pressure or diabetes in some cases. And so that's where the research is showing us that if we can modify some of the ingredients and some of the food options that we choose, food can be medicine in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases.
Yeah. That will take place on the 31st and the 1st. What are the times if folks want to attend?
So Yeah, sure. On January 31st, our cook-off is an invite-only opportunity on the 31st. However, on February 1st, we'll kick things off at 10 a.m. at 2600 Ursulines Avenue. And then the community day will start at 2 p.m. at Bricolage Academy on Esplanade.
All righty. Best of luck to you, Cornelius, and thank you so much for joining us. Cornelius Bankston, managing partner of Tech Plug, an innovation firm with a focus of addressing health inequities in our community. We really appreciate what you do. Let me ask one final question of you. Sure. Your work with NOLA Coalition, I know a lot of organizations have newly created this relationship with them. Your thoughts?
I believe in collaboration. I think when you have diverse perspectives coming together to solve a common problem, it helps all ties rise. And so I think it's a valuable opportunity to bring different organizations together to advance the causes for a diverse population that we see and live in.
And I don't know how long, I know you said the organization is new to the city. I don't know how long you've been in the city, but you know, it's interesting for me, Cornelius. For me, I've learned a lot about organizations that have been around a long time. I'd not heard about them. I've been exposed to some organizations doing great work, and I really appreciate, if nothing else, something as simple as that.
Yeah, I think it's powerful. Indeed.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week, and best of luck with Rue Day on your two-day event, January 31st and February 1st.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a great day.
You too. That's Cornelius Bankston, managing partner of Tech Plug. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Todd Bensman, Senior National Security Fellow, Center for Immigration Studies. Todd, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Todd, we've had this little short-lived tug of war between the Colombian president and President Donald Trump over the deportation of Colombians being taken back to their country. But before we talk about this specifically, if you could kind of lay out for the listening audience how the deportation process works. And we're not, a lot of folks are of the belief that we can just simply push them back across the border.
Right. Well, ideally, when they're already in the interior and they're removable by law, meaning they've been convicted of a felony or a judge somewhere along the line has issued a final removal order, ICE can go pick them up wherever they can find them, bring them to a detention facility, and fly them home to their home country. That's kind of where we ran into trouble with the Colombians, because it takes, the home country has to approve taking them back. So that's the gist of the way that works. We tend to, out of diplomatic respect, take the we need the permission of the receiving country to accept them back. And in this case, of course, the Colombian government decided not to do it briefly.
And they used the excuse that they thought that the U.S. was treating these individuals improperly?
Yes, because they were military cargo planes, which if you've ever been on one of those, you know, they're not like American Airlines, although they're not terrible either. I've flown lots of those cargo planes. It's somewhere, you know, south of American Airlines and north of Spirit Airlines. I hope they're not one of your advertisers, but in any case, it's not that terrible to fly aboard one of those.
Right.
But he used that as his sort of main objection, when really he probably meant, I don't want these criminals here. We want you to be stuck with them. These are rapists and murderers and child molesters. Like, you keep them.
So you have to fly them back to the origin country unless you share a coterminous boundary. So if you're Mexico, if your country of origin is Mexico, we can push the Mexicans back across the border. If you're Canadian, we can push Canadians back across the border, right?
Right. But, you know, the Mexico could agree to accept all different nationalities beyond just Mexicans. So, you know, they can take back whoever they want. But they probably prefer to take back only Mexicans. But that's also not going to be happening much either. They're going to be taking back a lot of different nationalities.
So then Donald Trump responds by saying, well, this is simple. We're going to put some tariffs on Colombia and do a couple of other things. If you don't want to play in the sandbox with us relative to this, we will make it even more difficult for you.
Yeah, which should have been predictable to Gustavo Petro, who's the leader of Colombia, that he'd be made an example of. I mean, in order for this deportation whole process to work, the program to work, you have to have the agreement of all these different countries to accept them back. So those who say no to Donald Trump are going to be subject to devastating tariffs, and not just the tariffs, but the withholding of travel visas for the ruling elite and the party elite. In Colombia, they all love to go to the United States. That's really, really hitting them where it hurts. And that's what they did. They Trump said, look, it'll be 25% now. And if you don't relent in a week, it's going to be 50%. And then we'll take it from there. So in a way, he sort of put Petro's head on a pike for all the world to see as an example. And Petro should have known better. Trump is, he likes to play the madman theory of like, you never know what I'll do. He's crazy. You never know what he'll do. And he's more than happy to use tariffs for Mexico and Canada. And, Petro probably was going to lose his job over this if he persisted, because he's already deeply unpopular in Colombia. So something like, a big trade war with the United States, which can withstand the damage of retaliatory tariffs far greater than Colombia can withstand any tariff at all, that he was going to lose this thing. And so he decided, I'll just stay in power and take the flights, however the Americans want to send them.
Probably not a bad country to start out this process with, right, in setting an example. But quite frankly, most of the countries that we would be deporting to, Colombia may be better off financially than a lot of the others.
Yeah, I mean, remember, we've had citizens of 170 plus countries cross our border, and they're all inside the United States, from every country in Africa, every country in Asia, the Far East, every country in the Middle East. And, they all are going to have to accept these deportation flights. If they don't accept the deportation flights, then, there's going to be hell to pay. That's how Trump operates. Whereas, Joe Biden inherited a system just like that and didn't really have the inclination, shall we say, to play that way. He thought that it, kind of degraded the United States in some way, and, that people didn't like it and, got unhappy about kind of hardball tactics like that. So the Mexicans pushed him over, the Colombians pushed him around. Everybody who decided they didn't want to take flights just said, we're not going to take them, and they were left alone. So the Americans were stuck with the hot potato, 10 million people from all different parts of the world. But Trump is a different animal, as we all know. So, he made an example out of Gustavo, and I think a little bit of Trudeau in Canada first and Sheinbaum of Mexico at the same time. He told them before he was even in office from the campaign trail, he goes, hey, if you don't shut this down by the time I get into office, I'll enter office and immediately put 25% trade tariffs on you just to start out with. And then we'll go from there, which, of course, would leave those economies in smoking ruin.
So I guess to folks that are really not familiar with all of this, one has to ask, well, then how do we expect this to work if we're not able to deport? Right?
Right. It can't work. It just can't work. So therefore, they're all going to get the same muscle from Trump, take them back, Ghana, Burkina Faso, all these different countries, we're going to take them back, or, we will destroy you. And that's how it works. Now, they also have the option, the U.S., of just dropping them all in Mexico. Mexico will take them, and that'll be their problem. The administration, Trump has already said, I'll put 25% tariffs on you if you don't take everybody we give you. And initially the Mexicans were like, no, we'll only take Mexicans. And eventually she relented and said, all right, we'll take everybody. So the Americans do have options.
And that's simply because they really haven't policed their southern border, right? Because they're coming up, they're landing in South America, moving through the Darien Gap, through Central America, and into Mexico and into the United States.
Right. It creates an incentive for these countries to also create their own deportation programs, because nobody wants to get stuck with the hot potato. The United States has gone on the record now saying we will not be the end destination for all these people any longer. And that means they're going to be stuck in your country. And so it's up to you to do with them what you want. And it's a big domestic political problem for the Mexicans. Most Mexicans can't stand having a million foreign nationals, you know, hanging around on their street corners and begging and, you know, on public assistance and clogging up roadways and all that on parks, public parks. So Sheinbaum's eventually going to have to start her own deportation program and shut her own southern border down because Trump did. And that's how it works. It's like a reverse domino effect all the way down the trail. And we saw this happen during COVID when all the countries along the routes closed their borders. And when they did that, all these countries were stuck with all the people that were en route at the time. And, you know, they started to get rid of them or make sure that they were able to go home. And the UN provided buses, free bus rides for thousands of them to be driven all the way back to hometowns in South America and Central America. So nobody wants to get stuck with the hot potato once the U.S. border is closed, which it is now.
So, Todd, where does this end? I mean, you know, mainstream media is saying that, you know, this is not a humanitarian on our part. It's not this. It's not that. But, you know, every country in the world has their immigration laws, most more restrictive than ours. And those that aren't have become more restrictive than ours. And you have very few tools. The president has very few tools in dealing with this, right? I mean, if a country says, you're not flying planes and dropping off your deportees in my country. Tariffs is one of the few, right? And the easiest.
It's easy. And they can also shut down the issuance of all visas
travel visas, everything. Right.
Now, these are powerful tools. And they can also, you know, put trade sanctions, other kinds of trade sanctions on. There's really quite a lot they could do. A lot of these countries receive, not to interfere with your flow of thought there, but they get, you know, whatever, $500 million a year in, you know, stuff called security assistance or humanitarian aid, just cash. Well, we're taking it all back. We're shutting all that down, too. Like, there's a lot they can do to, let's just say, encourage countries to accept these flights, and they all will.
But this really begs the question, you know, if you have these kind of issues and difficulties on the deportation side of enhanced border security, right, of figuring out who people are before they ever come in.
Yes.
That's where you get the best return on your investment is right there. Because the back end options are really hard. They're lengthy, they're costly. They're not efficient. There's all kinds of issues. Once they hit the motherland, that's it. I mean, you know, we impose these rules on ourselves. We've made it really difficult to remove people from this country, where you don't see as onerous, systems as onerous as ours to remove them if you're in other countries illegally.
Yeah, we do have somewhat. I mean, you know, people claim asylum and they're already in the interior and they're in process. You can't really remove people that are already in different kinds of processes. for immigration, which lasts years and years. And, you know, then there's the appeals. So there is that. But, you know, the law says that, you know, we must detain everybody in this country who's in an asylum process, for instance. They have to be detained while they're in the asylum process. So I think eventually the Trump administration will be able to expand the detention space, re-expand it, back, restore it, really, and just put people in detention and allow them the ability to leave. If they don't want to wait for 4 years in detention, they could wait in Mexico, for example, or just go home, come back when a Democrat is elected. But the point is that the law is very generous with detention. It requires it, actually. It demands that all illegal immigrants, regardless of what they are claiming for asylum and all the rest, have to be in detention. Shall is the term. Shall be detained for the duration of the process. So I think that the administration, the Trump administration, is going to be working toward the capacity to do that, the infrastructure to be able to do that. And that is extremely deterring. Nobody wants to come into the U.S. if you're going to be in detention for 3 years. That's not the plan. That's never the plan. It's just simply allowed by the Biden administration and even some other ones. But the law says you got to detain them all the whole time. Shall.
And that's why I guess the Biden administration created all these exotic schemes to kind of work around it.
It's a good way to put it. Exotic schemes. You know, we're gonna let, you know, a million people fly in over the border so that they don't congest the physical land border as much for the media cameras during the campaign. Or we're gonna walk them over the bridges through the ports of entry and then let them go that way so nobody sees them crossing through the brush. And those kind of parole programs are all canceled now. And I believe most of those people that came in that way are now subject to removal or will soon be subject to deportation as well.
Now, also the other day, I think there was an executive order rescinding the refugee status of Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans. Is that correct?
Well, it actually put all refugee programs for all refugees anywhere in the world on hold for 4 months. Not just the CHNV, you know, the four that you named.
Right.
But the four that you named were important because the Biden administration came up with a way to abuse the refugee processes to bring more of those four nationalities in as refugees. They don't qualify as refugees. Most refugees that we let in are like, you know, war refugees over in the Congo or Syria. You know, they were in the war. So they came up with this scheme to, you know, and it takes 2 or 3 years for somebody to obtain refugee status while they're in the camps. So they came up with this thing to very quickly, within 7 days, turn all kinds of Haitians, Venezuelans, Guatemalans, seven different nationalities into refugees and then fly them in to the United States, just tens of thousands. And we don't have refugee programs in Latin America for the most part. They're very sparse. Over historically, because those are economics. They're economic refugees, or I'm sorry, economic immigrants. They're just simply poor. And that's not a grounds for obtaining refugees. So they were just refugeeizing economic migrants, just like they were handing out humanitarian paroles to hundreds of thousands of them and just waltzing them right into the country. So that they could just keep the congestion down at the border, which looks bad when Fox News drones fly over it.
So when we have this confluence of all of these programs being suspended or ended at one point in time, I mean, within days of one another, right? What does this do to the system?
Well, it halts everything. We're not going to be flying in refugees from anywhere in the world for the next 4 months. They're going to assess whether the program had been abused by the Biden administration. Biden administration, I don't know, I think quintupled the number of refugees that they were bringing in. Just a vast historic expansion of refugee importation, not just from Latin America, but definitely the new place being Latin America for economic migrants, but from everywhere. And they want to know a couple of things. One is, you know, do they really qualify? Is there really nowhere else they can go? And are they a national security threat? Can we rule them out as maybe being terrorists or, you know, some other kind of gangster or gang member, or, you know, had some kind of criminal record in their home countries that nobody ever bothered to look for? You know, there's been reporting recently that the Biden administration was so eager to flood the zone with refugees from Latin America that they ordered their adjudicators to ignore gang tattoos, which had been always been a big no-no. You don't get in if you're in a gang. And so the reporting was that, you know, the Biden administration was fine with bringing in gang members, all kinds from all over the world. And so that kind of thing is, you know, is what caused the Trump administration to hit the pause button and say, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Nobody else is getting in until we figure out what these guys were doing. They were up to no good on the refugee front.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this ends. A lot of folks in the media still very critical of this and, you know, and of the approach. But unless you stop it and take a breath and look at it, you know, you don't really gain a full understanding of everything that they've done and what the impact has been, right?
Right. Well, I think the American people know what the impact is. They voted on it for Donald Trump. And the polls are showing that the deportation plan is supported by 80% of the American public, which is just unheard of. So if the media is, you know, oppositional and people are out there in a very fringe minority of under 20%, and I don't think it's going to fly this time.
No, I get that sense as well, for sure. Todd Bensman, it's been a while, but we always appreciate your time, your insight, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure thing. Good to be here.
Thank you, sir. Senior National Security Fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Give us a shout. We'll go to the talk line. Stay with us. So welcome back, folks. It was good to hear from Todd Bensman, Senior National Security Fellow, Center for Immigration Studies, on the latest. And there's so many different things going on, and it's moving very, very quickly. I don't know if you saw the interview with Margaret Brennan and the Vice President J.D. Vance, where she was asking him about the refugee program and folks that were in the process of filling out applications, and they thought they were going to be approved and they were not approved, and was trying to make the case of, you know, this not being fair to these individuals. And I simply asked the question, what do we owe them? I don't really get where they're going. It's almost as if they don't have something, they're going to try and make something up as it relates to this. And I've been pretty consistent on this issue all along. The rules are what they are. Plain and simple. Follow the rules. The moment in time we start creating these exotic schemes to get around the rules for whatever reason, none of which I really understand why, we're doing it. they don't engage in exotic schemes to work to our benefit as citizens, do they? Are you aware of any? Because I'm not. Is there an exotic scheme for you to get out of a traffic ticket? For you to get out of running a stop sign? Simple things, right? No. They're not exotic schemes. But for whatever reason, when it comes to the immigration process, it's as though we owe people something. Well, they don't treat us that way in their countries. They don't feel like they owe us anything. You follow the rules or you end up where? In jail. I mean, we've had to do prisoner transfers because somebody had marijuana in their luggage. Right? And they're in jail. And it doesn't matter if you're in a socialist country, a communist country, a democracy, or whatever, they follow the rules. You get caught doing something that you're not supposed to do. They have the rules and their laws for a reason. They impose it on you. I don't understand where we feel like we have these obligations to folks. Because they knew, they all for the most part knew that a lot of these exotic schemes were recently created under the Biden administration. Quite frankly, he's to blame. He's the one that's created unreasonable expectations that people have of what this country has can bring to them by creating these exotic schemes as a workaround to a law. Because they all pretty much knew what the law was before. And now they've got this special opportunity. Well, these special opportunities like sales and marketing, they run out of time. They go away. They're not permanent. They know that. And it doesn't mean that it's bad policy that it's not permanent. How many times have we done this? On again, off again, on again, off again, you know, and whatever. But in light of everything that's going on in this country and what we've seen and the experience that we've had and the fact that the public has spoken and the fact that 80% of the people believe in this deportation policy that's being embraced, seems like it's off again for a reason. We'll be right back.